Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
I'm grateful that I never heard that I was prodigy. And in some ways, I feel, I wish I was prodigy. Wouldn't that be easier? And then at the end, I think it's easier not to be prodigy. And actually, we don't need a prodigy. Actually, someone who's a love of music and continue making into something organic as they grow as a person. And, you know, because when I went to art high school, where like already like 20 or 100 of pianists in Korea, which were playing very much advanced repertoire, they could be very much like professional pianist level. At that point, they were already playing 15 years of their life in piano. Where are they now? I don't know. I don't see them anywhere, you know? I mean, at that point, I think everybody could call majority of them or prodigy. They were prodigy. But where are they? But I think they're burnout. They first taste of failure, they gave up because they were not really create the environment that they actually, the failure is more of the taste of this field than the success.
Yeah.
They have created what the sense of success is, not by other people, but from within.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Ji-Yoon, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
And thank you for having me here.
It is my pleasure to have you here. So I found out about your work by way of your publicist who told me about your book, Whenever You're Ready, which is about, you know, composing the life that you want, which the whole idea of using composition as a metaphor for life really struck me. And, you know, as a former musician, I knew that I wanted to talk to you because I figured there was so much we could learn from you. But before we get into the book, I wanted to start by asking you, what did your parents do for work? And then how did that end up influencing the choices that you ended up making throughout your life and your career?
Oh, interesting. I always joked to my friends that I have two dads because my both parents worked, which I grew up in Korea. At that time, it was more where women would work in the working field. A lot of housewives and my friends always had their moms to cook and you know, take care of for bento boxes and all. But my mom especially was a businesswoman and a very good advisor. I never really had a fudgy kind of mom, but both my dad was more of like more soft side, but both my parents were more of a mentor all my life. And I think that really helped me to make choices in my life. And a lot of musicians have a tiger moms that really like take you to the lessons. But I remember even when I was 5 years old, I went to a piano institute. My both parents were working. I actually saw my parents only on weekends, basically, because they came home really late. But it was my decision to go to the piano institute every single day. When I think about that, it's really interesting. 5 years old, walking to piano institute as if like business of the day. And I think that kind of freedom that my parents gave me was incredible. I don't know anyone can give that kind of freedom and trust to their children from early on. But then every choice I made was comes with my responsibility. And I really appreciate that they cultivate that freedom from that early age, because when I went to the college, which at that point I was playing piano already 15 years, a lot of people burn out because they pushed them, my parents want them to do one and that. And a lot of practice is daily grinding. And if someone is telling you to practice, so, you know, no way you can actually continue doing that kind of pushing with another person, because it's already difficult even if within you. So practice was always my responsibility, and I chose to do that because I wanted to get better. And my parents were never in my scene. In some ways, I wish I wish my parents were more involved, but they weren't. And I appreciate later on, I think one time my dad asked me, "Do you really want to be a musician? You know, if you were a doctor or pharmacist and more stable job, you would have, you know, more clear path in your life." And that was in middle school, I think. And at that point, when he asked me that, I thought, you know what? More than clear than ever, I will not be a doctor. Yeah. I will be doctor in music, but not in a doctor. And I think I was clear and loud about my passion in music, and I could be able to articulate what I want in my life. And they were like, "Good. If that's your choice, we fully support it." And since I came to America, which was like almost 20 years ago, all my performance is taking place in America. I don't really perform. I do visit Korea once a year, just to check in with my mom and family, but I don't really perform in Korea. So my performance is mostly in North America. And about 3 years ago, there was first time my mom actually were at my concert, in professional concert. And, you know, a lot of people were like, would think my mom would travel with me, come to all my concerts. But yeah, it took almost 17 years for mom to come to my concert. And it was actually, I was very emotional and acknowledged mom being on stage. And when mom heard me playing last time was in high school, probably. I was a little girl. Now I'm here. I am on stage giving this concert, but there's mom that gave me all the love, all that freedom, all the trust, so that I can go out in the world to do what I need to do, but knowing that they're there. And I thank mom and play encore dedicating to mom. And it was this kind of flashback from 5 years old all the way to like here I am now. And what they gave to me was tremendous love and trust. And yeah, that freedom I really appreciate. So I think all my years of, even college, I went to backpacking for 2 months in Europe. I think a lot of mom would say, you know, "That's too dangerous. It's just woman by yourself going to backpacking for 2 months in foreign country." And, you know, I had a lot of dangerous moments, I have to admit. But I was like, you know, I am here. I'm going to make it through. And a lot of friends of mine would say, "June, you're really strong." And I always said, "No, I'm not. I'm not that strong. I just figure it out as I go. And I don't really like kind of like fall down and stay there. I try to find a solution in every situation." And at some point I thought, maybe that's a sign of strength. I don't know. But even for those years of college, I find that I was trying to navigate my life, which I find that it's all of our lives that we are trying to navigate. It's not like one is so sure about it. I think even your 40s or 50s, 60s, we're still trying to navigate. And I think that strength coming from within is really needed.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so I think that you know, what's interesting to me, I was waiting for the doctor, you know, pharmacist, you know, engineer conversation, I figured, because, you know, as I understand it, just from having had Asian American friends, you know, there's probably a lot of similarities between Indian culture and Korean culture. You know, right. My dad talked me out of a career in music, but as I told you, a piano mm-hmm. is far more versatile than mm-hmm. a tuba is. So one thing I wonder is, in the Korean culture in general, I mean, you seem to have had sort of an anomaly of parents, mm-hmm. but what is the standard narrative in Korean culture when it comes to careers in the arts? Because you know as well as anybody that this is mm-hmm. a life in which nothing is guaranteed and anything is possible. And it's definitely not easy. There's no clear trajectory in what you're doing. To your point, like, you know, it's like, oh, if you're going to become a doctor, it's like, okay, go major in some sort of science when you're in college, then apply to med school. And then, you know, you're kind of like the steps are laid out for you. Whereas right. when you're a professional musician, they're not, you know, like right. the number of people who find jobs, as we were joking, you know, about tuba players, it's like you're waiting for somebody to die to uh-huh. find a job. I'm like, so I always joke is like, so tuba players basically probably don't look at job boards. They look at obituaries every day.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. It's interesting. But my concept of Korea actually stopped 20 years ago because that's where I left Korea. So I probably, whatever I say is, you know, in 20 years ago, then my notion of Korea and probably it changed a lot more, worse or better. I don't know. But I always thought that in Korea, it improved their economy much faster than people's notion of being able to grasp the whole fast growth. So in the midst of that kind of growth, I think it's very much of an emphasis of financial stability and more clear path, which, so that's why a lot of, I don't know, you ever seen Korean dramas and there's always those rich guys saving, you know, women or, you know, like there's a very traditional mindset and which a lot of like worshiping the money aspect of it and the jobs that would give you the stability. So where the art coming in, it's interesting because Korean culture that we love music. I think we're the one of the most musical culture people in every other block karaoke. That's why, because people love to sing. I mean, when I was young, I mean, I play piano, but my parents wanted me to sing in front of relatives. Like, why I have to sing? I could play the piano, but they're like, sing something, Jiyeon, sing. And my parents will sing and my aunt will sing and every block will sing. And they, if there are some songs coming and everybody will, you know, sing. And I think we're very much of that singing and appreciate those art and music in general. Those art cultures ingrained in us, mm-hmm. but at the same time, those like they wanted to be stable in and keep up with the growth, fast growing of the culture. I think there's like especially classical music. I think it's a difficult place to be positioned because it's not really money-making. It's not clear. People are a little bit foreign about classical music, but there's other music. It's you know, that's why I think K-pop is so flourishing right now yeah. is that it is it's a part of the culture, has been always. It's just other countries it's kind of caught on and catch on where we have been, you know. So, but classical music is still my grandma, if I, you know, who passed away, unfortunately, but when I play classical music, she's like, oh, can you play something that I can sing along? <You know>? She appreciated it, but it was very foreign. So when I give a concert in Korea, it's, you know, high schoolers and college, people are like, this is some kind of social outing, but I don't really get it, you know? Yeah. So I really felt disconnected to the culture. When I came to Europe, actually, for the first time, oh my gosh, this is their root of this. Their Schubert is their ancestor. And, you know, so that I felt, oh, wow, that's a different kind of feeling of connection to the classical music. And even now, I feel like there are amazing Korean musicians coming out of Korea and still working actively in Korea. And I think they take advantage of this culture of singing culture and like musical culture, yet they have a lot of work to do in Korea to educate people. What is even Chopin and what is it still same music compared to their K-pop they're listening and any other music? So I think that bridge is a little bit more needed. But also at the same time in America, it's that same work is needed for the younger generation. So I think it's a work, it's a very much similar work for the classical music to survive anyway. But I think overall, people would really appreciate art and culture, yet for the job, they will encourage you to go to a doctor and become a doctor. What about doctor who can play piano? You know, nobody would recommend me to go to field of just musician. And what does that mean? You know, it feels very unstable. Unless that's professors, you know, then professors, it's getting a professorship in piano even it doesn't matter. You got a DMA, even most reputable, university in America or in Europe, you still have to bribe. There's still like politics, probably it's everywhere in America as well, but it's a more obvious in America, in Korea, that you have to make the connection to know the right person, right people to bribe, and, you know, and then maybe, hopefully, if you donate $100,000 to the university, you may have a chance. So there's some corruption, I see that, and hopefully that's getting better, or I don't know. But oftentimes, whenever I go back to Korea, I feel like, you know, I love coming back here. I loved connecting with culture, and this is my, culture that I really feel connected. At the same time, I don't think I can survive here.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that raises so many questions. Now I finally understand why Asian people are so into karaoke. So thank you for, you know,
exactly. Telling me
that explains what that whole, you know, like phenomenon. I mean, I remember I had two, you know, Chinese girlfriends, and I remember thinking, I was like, what is it with you guys in this karaoke thing? And then now I understand.
Yes, so, you do.
It goes back to the roots. Oh, you know, so one thing I wanted to know, so you mentioned that you left Korea 20 years ago and you came here to study music in the United States. So I'd imagine that you probably have also been around Korean Americans who have also pursued careers in music. Mm-hmm. What did you see as the sort of contrast in the way that, you know, they were raised, the way that they were socialized, you know, and narratives around careers in the arts for them versus you? Was it the same as what we were just talking about, or did you notice any distinct differences because of the fact that they grew up here?
I see. That's very interesting. You know, when I came to America, I decided I really need to immerse myself into the culture. So I already speak English, which probably helped. So a lot of people thought I was Korean American, but I was just very much Korean when I arrived first day. Everything was so foreign, like, you know, everything about it was like, it's foreign country, every language. And but I was speaking English, so I was kind of can fit into the culture. But I have to figure a lot of things out. And I think it's first thing that I was really surprised was driving through. What's a drive-through? You know, I went to the, like, you don't even walk to the store. You actually drive through, you know? And that was like a culture thing and a lot of just little things, you know? So there are, I'm not sure I could speak for those Korean actually moved to America who still had a difficult time for the language and still having a difficult time to adjusting their culture into the new culture and adjusting themselves. And I think I did a good job, even though I came like, you know, in 22 or 23, which is already, I'm already established a person. And then I came to a different culture, but I still did not have a lot of a Korean friend, but I really tried to like go to American church and actually become a music director in American church. And I really like become a part of the culture. I try really hard. And from there, I could see, oh, there's some part of the culture in America. It's a little funny. I don't know. They don't really like, you know, appreciate, like there are a lot of waste I saw in Korea. Everything yeah. has to meticulously measure into not to be waste. And mm-hmm. if you have to pay for it to go to waste, you know, here it's like, oh, there's a big bin of the trash can is like huge. I never seen that huge of trash can. And, you know, you just throw everything in one together. And I felt a crime to do that. And then I see these Korean American musicians in school most of times, actually. And there grew up a different kind of, I think, difficulties. I think we both have a challenges. Korean being complete, being Korean and coming to the America, everything is so foreign. I think their difficulties finding who they are. Am I Korean? Am I American? They're speaking English, but yet they may speak Korean with their parents. They're understanding some kind of Korean culture, but never been to Korea. You know, so they are like trying to figure out their identity versus I am. I already know my identity. My identity is Korean, but I wanted to try to immerse myself into American culture. So I felt like I'm actually have ahead of them in some ways, that the stableness of a mindset. that I already know who I am. Like who I am is Korean, but I'm going to be like American, but I'm only going to pick and choose what I like about this both cultures. There are some things in Korean culture I hate. There are some things in American culture I love. So I kind of like, you know, I always hated it in Korea, but now I love this, you know? So I felt like I have a better perspective of two cultures, be able to emerge and find the best version for me and to make conscious choices where it's America is better for me or Korea is better. No, I actually know that America is better for me because of this reason. First is I wonder Korean Americans actually did not have enough of Korean culture to be exposed, just like only Korean Koreatown in LA, you know, or some Korean church they go, and there's some glimpse of Korean culture with the food that, you know, they eat, but not so much of those. What is the culture is really giving you that kind of good and bad, you know? So, in a lot of the Korean parents that they grew up with, they're also stuck in their 50 years ago, the mindset in Korea. Yeah. So that they didn't really grow up with the Korea as they've developed. So I think their point, you know, a concept of Korea is very much of old Korea. So their mindset can be also very more stubborn and traditional mindset. So I think they struggle even more of Americanized. They grew up in America, yet their parents just kind of stay in that traditional 50 years ago Korea, even though, you know, they're living in America. So I don't know. I can't speak for Korean American culture, but I do see that. But obviously, the big advantage of them growing up in America is they speak fluently. You know, the English is their just like their mother language, so they can maybe step into some other like a culture or field or work much more easily. But yet, I still make a full of mistakes in English, and but yet music is still universal language. So yeah. I don't find that there's a lot of barriers the way I communicate with people with how I speak English. I'm not sure how much more advantage I would have if I have just polished and no mistakes whatsoever, just perfect English. So I'm not sure. If I even answered that question correctly.
Yeah, no. You know, it's funny. You speak about music as the sort of universal language. You may have heard of him. There's this Indian composer, A.R. Rahman, who does, you know, all the soundtracks for the Bollywood movies. And it's funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, despite being, you know, Indian American, I'm not really into Bollywood movies. And I absolutely love all of this guy's music, and I don't understand a word of it. Because I don't speak Hindi, and I'm like, okay, this is, and you know, somebody, his biographer said, he's like, the man is the definition of the word, you know, the phrase music, you know, has no language. So, you know, that, you know, obviously raises, you know, sort of numerous interesting points about, you know, culture, and, you know, being socialized. But I want to go back to something you said at the beginning of our conversation about, sort of, you know, tiger moms and, you know, being 5 years old, being forced to practice, you know. So we had Daniel Coyle here who wrote a book called The Talent Code. And, one of the things that he said, and this is a pattern that I saw, you know, with a lot of people who study people who become experts, you know, even Anders Ericsson, who sadly passed away this year, who kind of coined the term deliberate practice. There's this sort of common thread that child prodigies often don't become successful as, you know, adult musicians. And, you know, not that I was a child prodigy, but, you know, I saw kind of firsthand how I lost the love for this thing. And funny thing is, my parents didn't force me to practice. Like, if you have a kid who plays a tuba and you live in an apartment, the last thing they want is somebody who practices all the time. But the thing that I think is so striking to me is that at 5 years old, you just had this sort of love and passion that sustained. So why is that? And then what happens to those kids who lose it?
I think it's, the life is complicated. The person is very complicated. You know, because I am also a teacher that teaches those potentially so much potential in this prodigy, like students coming in my, you know, in my garden, because I feel like I'm a gardener and I can only kind of help them to grow in their own shape, a bonsai tree or something, you know. And I see those like, oh my gosh, there's so much potential. They have a sense of rhythm. The feel of the music is so organic and natural. Yet they're always lacking something significant to become a musician. I think a musician, I'm not sure in any other field, but especially for musicians, that we need, this is a lifelong journey. So we can really kind of measure someone's success the way they play 5 or 10 years old, or even 20, or even 30 sometimes. And we have to look at it as the life's journey of it. And a lot of times we praise like 5 years old. Oh my gosh, there's a lot of seeds that's growing. It's growing. Oh my gosh. And there's a lot of, kind of a praise around the relative to their age. That yes, they are creating amazing music relative to that 5 years. But if I hear only that music, close my eyes, I can still see the immaturity in that. I wouldn't really nurture or appreciate that whatever they already have naturally. And what I'm really interested in for me is how they're going to carry this amazing seed they have and make it into a wonderful tree in 50 and 60 years down the road. But a lot of times those kids often they're praised young. They praised probably they, wow, you have so much talent. Then they never really had a connection from what they have is amazing, but still they have to work really hard, as hard as other people don't have it, even harder to make it something beautiful or something very special about it. But I think they kind of like, oh, I had it. I'm already talented. I just don't have to do a lot of work, but it actually comes very easy. I think that's actually a very dangerous gift. And at that point, they never made a connection from the hard work and actually feel the challenge, feels defeated when they're young, and never really nobody pay attention to them. Nobody told them they're a prodigy. Maybe that gives them a drive and like, I want to work hard. And then when they work hard and they create a beautiful music afterwards and someone like really moved by that performance and they felt, wow, I really worked hard. I felt connected and someone really felt it. Then those connections creates a momentum and keep growing versus those kids that already create something beautiful, I'm sure. But then a lot of people, like 100 people is like, oh my gosh, this kid's going to be next Horowitz, next Rubinstein of the world. Then they're like, oh yeah, I already have it. And as soon as they feel failure, they feel like, oh, no, I can't do this. You know, they're very much of a weaker in their mindset. I'm grateful that I never heard that I was prodigy. And in some ways I feel, I wish I was prodigy. Wouldn't that be easier? And then at the end, I think it's easier not to be prodigy. And actually we don't need a prodigy. Actually someone who's a love of music and continue making into something organic as they grow as a person. And, you know, because when I went to art high school, where like already like 20 or 100 of pianists in Korea, which were playing very much advanced repertoire. They could be very much like professional pianist level. At that point, they were already playing 15 years of their life in piano. Where are they now? I don't know. I don't see them anywhere, you know? I mean, at that point, I think everybody could call majority of them or prodigy. They were prodigy, but where are they? But I think they're burnout. They first taste of failure, they gave up because they were not really create the environment that they actually, the failure is more of the taste of this field than the success. You have to create what the sense of success is, not by other people, but from within. Otherwise, you always ask for others, people to comment or, you know, like other people's comments. And I think that's dangerous, you know, and because there are so many musicians out there. And if you think about, you know, tuba, there's less seat, but piano, and think about piano, every other block, there's a pianist, you know? So there's much more competition in that way as well. And I think it's easy to think that you're in the ocean of, you know, thousands, millions of pianists who are prodigy, and why am I doing this? What's my place? And there's no point of doing this. You know, I mean, someone else can do it. So they go into that kind of trap, which is very dangerous, and yeah, they will give up.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's so true for all creative work, right? I think that I see this with writers who have some sort of success and they rest on their laurels. And it's basically, you know, you're only as good as the last thing you created, and the journey really never ends. You know, like to me, it's like the moment you rest on your laurels, you're done. So, you know, I think that really does make a you know, beautiful segue into talking specifically about the book. And funny enough, I want to use a bizarre story as a jump off point to getting into the concepts in the book. So, you know, I told you I made Allstate Band 3 years in a row. I was really fortunate because Texas is like, you know, a breeding ground for world-class musicians. It probably has the best high school music. You probably know this, but it has probably the best high school music program in the country because there's nothing else to do in Texas. If you have football, you have band and orchestra. And not only that, there's a portion in some districts, music education is mandatory, which was wonderful. And I had a teacher who told me, you will make Allstate Band the day I picked up the instrument. And, you know, I had no natural musical aptitude, but that motivated the hell out of me to practice. And so, you know, in ninth grade, the way that Texas works is you have, you know, all region, all area, and then all state. And in ninth grade, what they do is they create a separate all region band for ninth graders because they think that, you know, ninth graders won't, you know, make it to the other one. And my band director was like, no, you're not doing that. He said, you'll be first chair. You know, so he said, you need to challenge yourself. And so he said, I think that you can actually make it to area, which is, you know, the next, like that's one step away from all state band. So I ended up being second chair in, you know, the region. And I remember everybody called me the kid who's actually a senior who looks like a freshman, even though I was a freshman. But then we got to area. And to this day, like this is my sort of one of those moments in my life that I think I still, you know, resent, you know, mainly because I feel like it defined me forever. And I felt like I even because to me, making Allstate Band in California didn't mean the same thing as it did in Texas. So there was no redemption to it. But I'll tell you what happened, because I think it really does make a perfect segue to getting into the concepts in the book. I mean, you know, this as somebody who's auditioned, right? Because professional orchestras use blind auditions where they don't know the name of the people. So, you know, you don't end up playing the whole piece because nobody has time to hear you play the entire thing. You play like the excerpt that they ask you to play. So you go into the, you know, we go into the room. It was at the UT Austin Music School. You know, we go through the first two rounds and I played both pieces perfectly, you know, just nailed them. I was like, I'm like, here I am. And I remember telling a friend that morning, I was like, you know what? The fact that I got this far was unlikely anyways, given I was a freshman. I was like, my only outcome that I would be incredibly disappointed or devastated by was that if I missed Allstate Band by one chair, anything else would be fine. And of course, that's exactly what happened when we went back into, you know, the room for the third piece. For some reason, my mouthpiece had gone cold. Like, you probably know this with brass instruments, you have to warm up. And for some reason, like when I played it, I cracked a couple of notes and I was like, holy shit. And I still know the name of the kid who beat me to this day. I remember his name was Scott Jackson and he wore a beret. And, you know, in Texas, there's a rule where if, you know, whoever, you know, like was picked didn't have good grades that, you know, the next semester, then the next alternate would get to go. And here I am, you know, hoping some kid who I've met once fails, you know, all his classes. So I think that makes a perfect segue to, in my mind, to talking about the ideas in the book. But you're somebody who, you know, makes a living doing this. What happened?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
What happened in that moment to me?
Oh, to write a book?
Well, no. Yeah. I mean, what happened to me in that moment? Because I think that that is like a perfect jump off point to kind of get into the concepts in the book. Something clearly happened that just, you know, paralyzed me.
Yeah, I think that possibly self-doubt. Yeah. And they actually wanted to win something, which is external goal. It's often dangerous in music, and rather than actually connection to the music, and you just do the best, but without expecting the result. So every time I go on a stage, that I do my best, and I want to connect, but I want to connect to the music, but I don't expect this to be most successful. I win this competition. That when that external goal is get in the way, then I think we lose a focus on the actually very thing we do, which is actually appreciating the very moment and make a humble approach to, you know, I'm grateful that I'm here. I'm grateful there are people actually listening, even though this is a competition, even though that was like really severe, you know, you only play the excerpts. I wonder if you were actually connected to the music and thinking to connect this music through the music and to the people, and maybe you would be able to kind of continue the momentum of beautiful music. But then at that moment, I felt like you could have felt like, oh, I'm going well, which is, I always find that the going well voice is also not helpful. You know, I'm not going well, it's also not helpful, which I call it as a monster. But angel voice, which is like, wow, you're doing great, it's also not helpful, because it's none of those voices, it's not part of the music. So those, yeah. I find that we are observer of those voices. So when you can, you know, really follow those angels' voice, like, whoa, I'm doing great. And all of a sudden, the monster, like, you're not going well, you know, so then you're caught up in their debate. But I find that it's really important that I keep it neutral. I'm not the angel, I'm not the monster, but I'm actually here to observe or just let them debate and actually focusing on the music, and I'm become a messenger of the music. And that, I think, for me, it makes me to be in the zone that I need to be. So I can only assume that you are really caught up in your angelic voice. Yeah. And also that you lose your focus on what it is important in that very moment, which is probably you creating music and you appreciate being there fully in the moment. And regardless what happens.
It's so funny. I don't think I've ever heard anybody articulate that back to me like that before, but it makes complete sense because it was something that I placed so much validation on. It was just like, oh, I'm going to be this kid who like is going to be the freshman and makes, you know, All-State band for the first time in, you know, 15 years from my high school. So everything you say makes complete sense. Well, let's talk about sort of habit and practice. You know, one of the things that you say is that it's not willpower, but habit that makes things happen. And to create those habits, we must create a system, which, you know, as a writer, I am hyper aware of that, but you go on to say something that really struck me. You say the first stage of learning is filled with great excitement of everything new in that honeymoon stage of the fresh relationship with a piece. Then a day or two, maybe a week goes by. Soon the real struggle of the piece, the real journey starts to set into the practice routine. No more mess playing, you know, no more messy playing, no more just goofing around with careless fingering is allowed. And so I think that I see this with a lot of creative people who do, you know, creative projects from writing books to starting blogs to starting podcasts. The problem is that the minute that that struggle becomes very real to them, that's when they're just like, oh, this isn't going to be as, you know, pleasurable as I thought it was going to be. And they give up. How do people stop themselves from giving up when things get hard? Particularly because you and I both know this. All creative work sucks when you start. Everybody sucks at everything when they start.
Yeah, I know that's really difficult. I think everything we do is initially like, oh my gosh, this is a brilliant idea. I'm going to go for it. Even starting a podcast or YouTube channel, I'm going to have a million, you know, subscribers. And or in the new piece that I try to go is like, oh my gosh, this is going to be an amazing piece. And soon, as I said, about a week or 2 weeks later, oh, I see, you know, but even in a relationship, you know, like there's a honeymoon stage there, like you're completely in, you know, la la land. And I think everything we do is like a relationship that you have to put the effort and time into it to make the relationship deepen the relationship. And for me, those relationships that I care the most is the one that you go through the ups and downs and actually know this person better and continuously deepen the relationship. That I cannot compare that to just the honeymoon stage of anyone. And I think the music as well, that at first that I play through and I love it, but I really don't know that piece yet, you know. Yeah. I have to go through the struggles. Part of the struggle is deepening the relationship, which I feel a lot of friction within me, like, oh, this section is difficult, like I want to give up at this point, like maybe it's easier to give up now than persevere. It really feels like it. And the more time put on, there is a tipping point, like I put so much effort into it, I just have to keep going with this. Yeah. You know, and then I keep going and keep going there. But the thing is that the reason I'm doing is not particular goal. What I realized is that not the concert day is my goal. That's why I play this particular piece or practice in general. I found that actually what I love is playing piano, period. Right. So then daily practice is actually exercising my love of piano, not regardless what I do, what I play. So if I wanted to create a podcast or writing a book, the act of writing is what I love. Being creative is what I love. So then I really think about, you know, it's actually I appreciate that I'm actually practicing and playing piano today. And then I kind of let go of this challenge. It's part of like, oh, wow, this is a part of the journey. But you know what? I am playing piano, you know? So I really have to remind myself what I love about and really put aside those external goals not as a goal, but goal is that I enjoy the process of just doing the act that I love. So then, you know, even if like creating a podcast and there's actually a lot of learning curves. That learning curves is difficult. I think a lot of times people give up. What I really emphasize is that it's not always difficult. There is one point, it's like boiling water. When you get to 100 Celsius, that's only boiling, not 99, not 98. So a lot of people give up when it's 98, like, oh my gosh, I did all the months of all the years of this work, it doesn't work. But the thing is, if you kept going, maybe two more pushes, you could have felt the sense of sweetness of, oh my gosh, I feel like I know what I'm doing. Or I feel like there's sense of a freedom, sense of a joy that came out of because you put so much work into it. It's a different relation at that point that you can't compare to the day one because you know this, you lived with it. You know, so I often think, even though I don't feel like I'm making progress, I know I'm making progress. I just believe that I'm making progress. So I keep going. And when I kept going, and one day that arrives out of nowhere, why it didn't happen yesterday? I don't know. But today it happened, you know? So yeah. I'm waiting for that moment without being so frustrated, but actually enjoying as I go. I try to like remind myself, I just love the act of doing, you know, if it was a podcast, I just love creating podcasts. Just fact that I love writing. So I wrote today, so which is wonderful. And then and keep pushing it. Even when I felt discouraged, I just kept going. And that day feels much lighter. It's on the way. It's impossible not to have it. Even sense of like, oh, I feel like I know what I'm doing. Even if a little bit of that joy it, for me, is cannot be compared for other kind of quick and, you know, easy joy. You know, it's not like a roller coaster ride in the park. It's not that kind of joy, but this is deeper joy that you can only earn by working hard. And I think I love the fact that all the music that I play is that kind of joy that I give a lot of like music to people, but actually they don't understand how much I receive.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that because I think that, you know, people always ask, you know, when you achieve some sort of, you know, like commercial success as an artist, like, how does it change? And I say, you know, it actually doesn't, because the only thing that changes is that now you get to keep doing this thing that you love so much. That's the real reward. You know?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So I'll tell you, my absolute favorite quote from your book was this idea of why versus what now. And, you know, you say, don't ask about why, ask what now, which is something I believe a teacher told you when you had a failure. And you say that thinking about what now is being present in the moment, accepting the current situation, whether good or bad, and mentally preparing to take action. Every step of learning a new piece of music or learning anything new must come with the daily accepting of what's true now and the ever-changing discovery of a new relationship. And, you know, I think that what is fascinating to me about that is that it's something that we all know, right? You're choosing to respond with creativity instead of react with, you know, fear or self-pity, which I know you go on to talk about. How do people cultivate that practice of asking what now and, you know, channeling, you know, the responses that come into something more positive?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when they're asking why, I think it's first thing is that we need to be aware of we're asking that why, you know, that why that happened to me. Like, I worked so hard. It shouldn't happen to me. Why? Why me? You know, because that's directing to the past. That's directing to something that we cannot control. That's something that we're like just sitting on the floor and crying, you know, and there's nothing positive about that. And as soon as we realize, I realize I'm asking, oh, why? You know, I worked that so hard, you know. And as soon as I realize that I'm doing being negative, then I ask that question, turn into what now? Then all of a sudden, like, I feel a sense of strength already. Like, there's something I can do about it now. And I always remind myself that there's always solutions. I just have to find it. I just couldn't figure out the solutions yet. It's not a solution. There's many solutions out there, but I just felt whatever that is, I have to accept it and just go forward. And the people, you know, you have to move forward, keep moving forward in life. And I think a lot of people would say that, like, would you go back in your 20s, early 20s? And my answer is no way. I would never want to go back to my early 20s because that means I have to go through all those life struggles in order to get to know me better or the lessons that I learned along the way of my life. So my thing is that, yes, I feel like there are life throws at you. Some unexpected events always happens. At that moment, they feel like it's so easy for me to feel, oh, I don't deserve this. Why? You know, but at the same time, this has been a life and it will be a life. But then how to navigate this life to be more positive, to be more happy? What I realized that there's always something I can do about this situation. And when I keep trying to move forward, and in fact, the failure becomes a reward, and because another door opened up because of that failure or whatever that happened at the moment. So I really have to believe that whatever happening at the moment is for the better. And just fake it until make it. Just believe that this is good for me. And then what can I do about it? What can I do about it? And, you know, I think that is about being present. Like, even we are changing. We're ever slightly changing. I believe that yesterday, today, in the big scheme of things, we don't know how much we changed from yesterday then to today. But I often feel like after going through a concert, giving a big concert, next day I feel a different person. I really feel like I changed who I am because of certain experience that I had on a previous day. So we are was slightly always changing. So I always wanted to be open-minded to myself, to saying, I don't know myself yet. You know, because I used to like this, but I don't like this. You know, my preference is ever changing. And I don't want another friend who used to be my best friend 20 years ago. Oh, gee, why you don't like this meat anymore? You know, whatever that is, it's past. It's not me anymore. I just accept me who I am now. And I want to keep moving forward in my life. So I'm looking forward to when I'm 60s or 70s. There's a different things that I will be able to appreciate because who I am then, you know? So what I can really maximize the life experience now is actually being today, being present today in this very moment. And what now always direct me to, what can I do? You know, it's like a little smile on my face, like, yeah, that was a sweet failure. What can I do? Yeah, I can try this and that. And that really puts me to the work that I can, there's always something I can do from any situation. And that gives me a positive mindset. And I often think that we are, if we don't do anything about actually pushing to the positive mindset, we are prone to more negative. I think somehow human beings are more like a force of negative mind is much bigger than positive. So it takes a lot more effort to be positive. But if you do that, maybe you're neutral, you know? So I try to be really like be a lot more energy food to the positive mind for me to not to be default setting, which is the being negative. So if you're not doing anything about being positive, probably you're being negative.
Uh-huh. Well, so there's one, you know, other thing that I wanted to ask you about. You know, one of the things you say is there anything in your life that you think is too late to start learning? Is there any area that you believe you're not talented in, but you love doing that activity? Then do it regardless of what your assumptions about your potential for improvement might be. And the reason that that struck me in particular is, you know, when we had a Daniel Coyle who wrote The Talent Code here, I was talking to him about music in particular and how, you know, despite what I had done, you know, in high school, whenever I tried to pick up a musical instrument later in my adult life, I was quick to give up on it. And I think it was largely because I was frustrated that I couldn't get good as quickly as I did then. And you know, I asked him and he said, look, he said, are you going to go open for Guns N' Roses at their next concert if you get to be a good enough guitarist? No. He said at a certain point, brain development, you know, takes on a different way that you just don't have that capacity that you would as, you know, when you're a child. But he said, can you get the good enough to impress the shit out of your friends and family? He said, yes, absolutely. So, you know, like, how does, you know, in other words, I guess the question is, if I wanted to impress the hell out of my friends and family by learning to play the guitar, what would be involved in the process?
I think it really has to come from what you want to do rather than to someone else. I always, even in my level, I try not to please everybody, but I just keep perfecting or keep deepening my relationship with my music. So, and as a result, yes, that I think you will impress all your friends and family. But I think my advice for that is really focusing on what you are interested in, what you are in, are passionate about or wanted to try. Interestingly, a lot of people know that with the perseverance and practice that will improve. But certain areas, they kind of think that that's impossible, such as music. They think, oh, I'm too late. I didn't grow up, you know, 5 years old and pick up on piano, so I'm too late. I'm talking maybe their early 30s or early 40s, whatever their age is, for their mind, it's too late. And if someone wanted to pick up an instrument, and actually be able to be comfortable with that instrument and be able to express themselves. And their goal is actually be able to express themselves through their music and be comfortable and sufficient on an instrument. Absolutely. I think the goal is here is that, you know, now I'm accepting this, whatever this is, guitar, piano, whatever that is, as a part of my life. Rather than something there's in 5 years from now, I'm going to give a concert to my friends and family. I'm going to impress everybody. That's, I find it's a little bit a dangerous goal because then you're still asking for the other person's approval, not from within. So I think it's really have to come from within. There were like 7 years old came to me in the past and 10 years ago taking lessons like, wow. And what is your goal? Like when I get into retirement home and 85 years old, I'm going to, you know, making everybody like rock and roll in the retirement home center. You know?
7 year old, you know? Thinking about an old folks home.
Yeah, 7 years old, thinking 85 years old. I hope I can do that. And I said, absolutely, you can do it. You will be the rock star of the retirement home center. I can guarantee you. And, you know, so his goal was actually enjoy. He loved music, but he never took a piano, not a single C, you know, ding on piano. But he came and, you know, he was rock and roll. Of course, it's not a rate of improvement of 5 years old, even 10 years old, even 20 years old. But he is improving. In fact, it's in this. He enjoys so much. His life was enriched by having an instrument in his life. And at the end, whether he's become a rock star in the retirement home center or not, he enriched his life so much that this is like, you know, present to his life, you know? So what is the measure of that? There's nothing to measure that because it's coming from within. He loved it. Yes, every time he plays piano, he smiles and happy, you know? And at the end, people love it. Even you're not most proficient professional level, but in fact, he is pretty good, you know? In fact, the people would think that, wow, you're so talented. Where did that talent come from? And he would say, practice. When you're 7, you pick up the instrument and start practicing, you know? So my advice is it has to come from within, you know? Daniel Pink would agree with me, the motivation has to come from intrinsic motivation. What do you want to do? What are you really interested in? Don't worry about what other people, don't worry about the rate. Actually, humans, we have to try harder to live with outside of the time. You know, we're not in a race. What kind of race is it? Only race is at some point we're going to die, but we don't know that either, you know. So we're really only species that aware of time. And because of that, I think we suffer so much. So when you pick up an instrument at 70, people would think, isn't that too late? What is the point of the late or early? What is that? You know, doesn't matter. You just live fully being present in the moment. Enjoy whatever you want to do. And I think in the bypass of it, it's so much greater. And other people would actually appreciate and receive from it. But you would enriching your life by introducing and keep, you know, pursuing whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I think that raises sort of two final questions for me that you brought up in the book. One of the things that you say is everyone has a different view of that perfect picture of success, yet it often seems to come down to numbers. You know, one of the examples that you cite is if you have X amount of money, then you're successful. And I think this really struck me. You said, I find that this picture of success is often elusive. We never have enough of it. The goal becomes a moving target. And yet, we are so conditioned to chase moving targets because that's what our society celebrates. That's what our society rewards. You know, we put billionaires on the covers of magazines. You know, it's people like you that get to write books. With all that sort of social programming in mind, how do you break that conditioning of chasing a moving target?
It's difficult because we are living in that environment, you know, and a lot of people pressure in some ways that, aren't you supposed to chase bigger venues of concert or more concerts or more followers in Instagram, more people to, you know, give a concert to. If there's 1,000 people in the audience, that's a successful concert. And I think, again, it has to really make a decision of what is a success to certain people, to you and to me. And that's coming from actually my own experience of doesn't matter if there's 5 people in the audience or 1,000 people in the audience, that does not make you one concert is more successful than the other. It's the way I am, the my being, it determines. If I were really struggled through this 1,000 people hall and I was really battling against the monster and angel whole time in my concert, it's not successful concert for me. But if there's 5 people in the audience and I somehow fully connected with it within myself to the music and be able to really express it, and there's not so much a struggle, I would call it a successful concert without what the numbers actually means for that concert. And then I realized that it's a very elusive game we are in. And I think we really have to know what makes one happy, what makes one to be successful without numbers. And for me, what kind of story can I create a daily day basis? Like if I were connected to my friends and I eat yummy food and I also get to express music on piano, and I actually felt very peaceful and content. And all of those status of being is more important than numbers. Because if I started to chase numbers, that I feel like I'm in the race, red race, basically, that like, someone else is chasing, someone else I have to chase too. And it's really stressful. And it's not the life design that I want to be designed in my structure of life. So when I step back and actually remove myself from that picture, then I am very successful today because I created music and I continuously being able to creative and I also be mindful and I was able to move my body. I felt great after running outside or, you know, whatever the glimpse of happiness, I could experience more glimpse of happiness throughout the day. I am more successful than anyone in this world to me. So, I try to find those moments and really appreciate those moments arrive. Like when I go practice piano and then I really enjoy certain moments like, oh my gosh, I love it. And, or when I connect with your friends and have a just chitty chat and great to connect with a friend. And I felt like, oh, this is so nice. Or I just had a lunch and it was like, oh my gosh, this food is actually really delicious, you know, or whatever this is. I try to kind of put those moments on the palm of my hand and cherish it for longer in my heart. And in order to do that, I have to create awareness a little bit better by practicing, you know, meditation and try to put myself in more of a calm lake. So that whenever those things happen in my life, bad or good, that I cannot react to it, but really appreciate when that happens, when bad happens. Also, I know that it will go. This also will pass, so that I can continue being who I am, keep blossoming whoever I become, and accept whatever that would be. And for me, that's the model of success to me. And I don't know how else could I create a successful day, a successful self, or a model of success than that.
Wow. Beautiful. So I want to finish with one last area from the book that really struck me. And I really love this, but I was so curious about it. You said, you know, you talk about, you know, pianos and you almost personify pianos. You say, even though those pianos on stage might look fabulous, the unique personality of each piano is something every pianist has to adjust to every time we play on them. Meeting each piano for a concert is very much like meeting a person. I need to find out what personality and tendencies each piano has as I begin a conversation in music. And that struck me so much because I never thought of, you know, sort of a musical instrument as having, you know, a personality that way. Why is that? Like, what does that allow you to do, you know, as a creative? And, you know, how does that apply to somebody who does any other kind of creative work?
Yeah, I think that's unique about being pianist. Often people joke about, like, being pianist is making bad piano sound good. I really agree that because often when I go to concert hall, although it looks all shiny and beautiful, they always have some underlying health conditions that I have to accept it, but often have to accept it very quickly. And I only have 3 hours to get to know this instrument before I actually give a public concert. And at the moment, I have to accept whatever this is and start to have a conversation with the piano. And I realized that often, so some people, piano is furniture, instrument, a dead thing. But for me, it's actually a living thing. When I try to have a conversation, hey, how are you today? And let's have a great conversation and believe this piano is the best ever existed in this world, and try to create some colors that even this piano never even imagined. And I try to just throw myself out there. I think you have more there. I think you can create even softer sound here. Can we try it? And then it does magically. It's just magic of it. I think it's something about the energy that I give. And the piano somehow responsive, and I respond back. And I keep having this conversation to this instrument. It's, that becomes another layer of the being a pianist and being on stage. And that taught me actually everything in life, the thing, the relation with the things, that's actually very become precious. That it's Marie Kondo will really agree with me of a minimalistic approach to things. But I think what I really love about it, relationship with thing, is that when you have some things, that if this notebook or whatever, the pencil, it's you appreciate. And if you have this thing as almost a living thing, your relationship changes. And so Marie Kondo, when she talked about it, is put the thing, clothing or furniture, whatever these things, touch it and ask, is this thing sparking a joy or not? If it doesn't spark a joy, let it go. And thank them, like, thank you for being in my life, served me well for thus far. Now I let you go. So then everything around me as sparks of joy, that creates a positive environment. I think the designing your environment to be positive is crucial for daily basis. So I try to, as best as possible, to put things in my house, around in my environment, in my vision, the things that I only need or spark of joy. And when it doesn't, and I try to let go, and I try to have a conversation with things every now and then. It may sound crazy, but the mug cup that you drink a coffee out of, like, oh, thank you, I really love you, I really appreciate you. To the clothing that you like, I really love this clothing. You know, it's not materialistic. Actually, it's opposite. Whatever you have, you appreciate. You know, so people, you know, Marie Kondo, there's really like a kind of heartwarming ceremony she does every time she goes into someone's house. She bows her knees and say, thank you to the house, to provide a protection and love and that place for the family. And I think that kind of appreciating things and to a point that this is the only thing and I would carry or care for it. And piano, I can have a conversation. To this mug cup, I can actually have a conversation. I appreciate. I think that's actually coming from some of actually Asian culture as well. We didn't have a lot before. So that really, like, we go through the war and, you know, a lot of, like, hands down, like, clothing or little things that we appreciate more. Now there are so many things that things reoccupy us than we occupy them. And I think we have to create a relationship with a positive relationship with the things. And for me, that giving a soul into a thing changes the relationship so that I can say goodbye or welcome them or say thank you or say I love you. And so then I appreciate when that thing disappears, then like, thank you for being there in my life. Then now it's time to say goodbye. Rather than unaware of all of the things in your space that kind of cluttering your mind and you're not aware of what things around you.
Wow. Well, I have one last question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at the Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Say that again.
What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Unmistakable?
Yeah.
What is unmistakable? I think that would be rather boring. Mistake is fun. I think for me, when someone or thing or person is unmistakable, it's a very dangerous statement. That means they're either they're lying or they're hiding, or they're not accepting the reality. They're not accepting what is. And I think the part of the mistake is not actually a mistake. It is a part of the imperfect human being. And I think a lot of times for in our society that there is a perfect figure of mannequin that, you know, a lot of women's like, oh, I need to have a smaller waist. And that doesn't really exist. You know, having bodies a certain way, the natural body, the way we are just perfect. The way you are, it's just perfect. If we think it as what is perfect, what is a mistake, we're creating black and white, which doesn't exist. My life is messy. Life cannot really define as a mistake or success or whatever that is. So for me, it's unmistakable is very dangerous place to be. And I much rather to be messy place and free to make a mistake and accepting the mistake, learn from mistake and keep moving forward, keep growing. That's a place I want to be. And I don't call it as a mistake. It's something like, oh, I play widely so that I can not go there this time. I'm going to play it the other way. But it's again, the playground concept of life is a playground. What I would like to do, what could I listen to myself? How could I direct myself without worrying about making mistake? Because if I think, try to be careful of not making mistake, I will not go anywhere, which probably capture me going into the little box inside the box, and I will not be able to expand myself, keep enjoy what life could offer me. Again, I'm here only in the limited time, and I want to experience, I want to keep growing, I want to keep inspiring others or be inspired. And I think that's where I want to be. And the mistake or not mistake is not the concept I want to put it in my head, but so that unmistakable is the exact place that I want to go opposite.
Wow. Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us, to share your story, your wisdom, and your insights with the listeners. This has been really beautiful. Where can people find out more about you, your work, the book, and everything that you're up to?
Yeah, I think you can find my book anywhere, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. I actually read this book myself, so it's available in Audible. I was very self-conscious about reading book with Korean accent. At the end, though, I think that's a beautiful journey. I don't think many authors would experience reading your own book out loud for like 6 or 7 hours. And afterwards, I actually felt like I was meeting myself. And I actually sense of loss at the end of reading the last sentence, as if I had this met this invisible readers that we went on a journey, a beautiful journey for a year and a half or 2 years, and we're about to say goodbye. And I think that we know that the journey was beautiful, but it's time to say goodbye. It's this beautiful experience for me to read my own book. And I think you might appreciate going through this book. And for me, it is a journey. And for me, this is a written concert for you. And I think whether this is you read it or listening to me, I think it is another invitation for me to reach out to you and connect. So that's all I wanted through coming out of this book. And I'm easily to be found. And I think if you like my book, you might also like to be part of my newsletter, which I write every 2 weeks. And things that I resonate with me in that week, the music that I, my favorite music of the week. So that way you can actually follow me more closely, regular basis. So if I ended up in your area to perform, you feel like you're coming to your best friends, happen to be a concert pianist giving a concert in your town. So please be connected, Instagram or Twitter, but I would advise that best way is through my newsletter. And I think you might appreciate my podcast, which is Journey Through Classical Piano, where I talk about one piece of music in depth as a friend.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here, like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The Four Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.